Okay, let's start. Nice to see you've all come back from Innovative Learning Week, wherever you were. So we're going to go on today talking about classes and objects and focus a bit more on building your own classes, so writing your own classes in Java. So last time, if you remember, 2 weeks ago, I focused more on using pre-existing classes. Now I'm going to look at how you design them yourself. So I'm going to do a bit of recap, then look at some examples. I'm going to detour here to look at formatting strings because it's useful and I need to talk about it at some point. And then I'll say more about constructors for classes. So, recapping, we talked about the fact that there are built-in types in Java. In particular, we have these primitive types like int and double and so on. We then talked about using classes like picture and calling methods on picture objects. So now we're going to see how we can create our own data types. So we need to think about what kind of values do we want to store. So what kind of values are we going to have in that data type? And then what kind of operations? And once you've got your values, you're going to map those into instance variables and the operations will be mapped into methods. And when you create a new object, often you want to explicitly declare a constructor to do that for you. So a class, the famous foo class, has three parts to it typically. It has instance variables, a constructor, which we can sometimes leave implicit, we'll see that, and instance methods. So it's good to get this basic structure in your mind, three parts. And we standardly do it in that order, first the variables, then the constructor, and then the instance methods. If you have a main method, that will typically come after the instance methods. So we've got our class, and we want to run it. To do that, we want to create some client code. And here I've called this client code foo tester to test my foo class. Inside that, I'm going to have a main method, and I'm going to create a foo object called f using new foo and calling the constructor. And then there's some variable baz whose value is gotten by calling a do something method on that object f. So the client code uses the information that we've defined up here. It uses the information about how to create a new foo object and then does something with it. That's just what I said. So how do you go about creating a class? Often it's good to start off with thinking about, well, what clients, what client code would want to use this class? How would I want to create and call it? What kinds of methods do I want to use on it? So intuitively, you can play around with these different methods that you might want that class to make available. And then use that to start saying, well, then I want a method for this, I want a method for that. And that gives you your API. That's the kind of outwards facing profile of that class. And one methodology is that actually before you actually implement C, you build your tester and think about what results you'd like to get, then build the implementation so it satisfies that specification, the implicit specification in the testing code. So typically, people that I know at least don't do it purely in this way. So this is so-called test-driven development, where you first design your tests and then you implement the class so it satisfies those tests, most people tend to interleave the process of implementation and testing. But it's good to think about, what do you want your class to do? So here's an example where we've got a circle tester. And we create a circle which has radius 1. And we're going to get the area of that circle, calling getArea. create a new circle. So we're passing an argument as a value into that constructor to tell us what the radius should be. So we know then that really we just want to implement getArea as the method that should be offered by that circle class. But we can see also we're passing in this floating point number, which is the radius. And so we have to store that data somewhere, right? So how do we store data? In an instance variable. So you should be able to figure out from looking at this that your class definition will have an instance variable in that holds the radius. So we've got our constructor here, we've got our method here, getArea, which is defined to use radius. And how does it know about radius? Because we've added it as an instance variable. So instance variables, you can think of those as being at the top level of your class. They have global scope, and they're outside the methods. And you can use any of your instance variables inside methods. So you just use them directly. You don't have to do anything extra. They're there for you to use. Unlike, so local variables are the variables that we defined inside methods, where we had to initialize them, give them a value inside a method. For an instance variable, we don't necessarily have to initialize them, because they'll always get a default value. So the default value of an int will be 0, for a boolean it'll be false, and for all reference types, it'll be null. So null is a special unique object which signifies something like not initialized. Okay, so notice in this case that we didn't initialize radius, we just declared it. Now, if we want to say that if we've created a new circle object, it really has to have a radius, then we're going to put that in the constructor. So a constructor will have the same name as the class. So if the class is called circle, the constructor has to be called circle. If we do new blah blah blah, new circle, that's calling the constructor of that class. And the thing that goes in that, in the brackets there, which looks like a parameter for an argument for a method, that's what we've got up here. So it looks very like a method. But the important thing is it has the same name as the class, and it does not have a return value. So you're not allowed to give it a return value. If you do, the compiler will complain. So you shouldn't even put void there. And notice here that what's happening, we've got this instance variable which says, all right, we're going to store a radius. When we call that constructor, we pass in an argument, we pass in a floating point number. That instantiates this parameter here and provides a value inside the body of the constructor, which gives us the value for radius. So the thing on the left there is the instance variable, the data held by that object. And what it gets there is the value which we've passed in when we create that new object. So that's really important to get that straight. So here's various things, the declaration of instance variables, constructor, constructor name, blah, blah, blah. And using instance variable inside that method. Are there any questions about that? So it's all clear. Okay. Sometimes you think, what? Why should I? Well, let me go back a bit. Sometimes it's a bit painful to think of, you know, I decided I want to call radius radius. That's the obvious thing to call it. If I'm going to pass in an argument, often you want to use the parameter name to be the same as the instance variable. So you might want to say, well, I want to call that radius. But then how do you know which is which if you say radius equals radius? So there's a convention which we use this dot as a way of indicating that's the instance variable, the bit of data for that object. So you can think of this as being like self and some other object-oriented languages. It's a way of designating the object itself. So this is quite unambiguous, and it says pass the value we get when we call an argument there to the instance variable. Is that clear?
Is that required?
What do you mean, is it required?
The previous slide had radius equals new radius. Does that also work?
That also works. Okay. Yep. This is fine, because we've used different variable names. The instance variable and the parameter are different. If they're the same lexically, then we have to disambiguate which is which. And so we can use the this dot convention to disambiguate them. But yeah, that's also fine. Thanks. So this is just recapitulating there that we've got our class here, and we've got some client code that calls it. So to summarize so far, we've got instance variables for holding data for the object. We've got instance methods. So they're like static methods, but they can only be called on specific objects using the dot notation, so O dot do something. And they have access to data that's specific to object O. For constructors, to create a new object of class foo, we use the keyword new. And we call the constructor for that type. And that helps us, can be used to store values in the instance variables for that particular object. OK, here's another example. So I've got class person with a instance variable string name. And I'm going to define a method to give a value to name, and then maybe there'll be some code here which prints out what that name is. Now let's suppose, for some reason, I want only to give names if the person hasn't already got one. So there's various ways we could think of doing it. This way it says, well, if the name has length 0, then I'll assign name the value n. This says, I'm going to initialize the name as the empty string and then test it. This one says, I'm going to test whether it equals null. And this one also says, I'm going to test if it's null, but using double equals rather than the equals method. So which of those will actually run? Go back over them again. So hands up who thinks one is okay. Hands up who thinks two is okay. Hands up who thinks three is okay. Hands up who thinks four is okay. Okay, so there's quite a diversity of views here. You all seem to be agreed that one isn't going to work. What I'd like you to do is just take a couple of minutes and talk to the nearest person you can find who disagrees with you and see if you can convince them that you're right. You can move around if you want to. I don't mind. So which ones did you think would work?
None. Because when you have a string, basically, a string is initialized as, I think, an empty string by default.
Is it a reference type?
I don't think so.
It is.
Well, that would be equals no, the version 3. The thing is, in 1 and 2, have dots, string, let's say string, dot length with parentheses, so it won't work. Sorry for passing value, but.
Why wouldn't that work?
Didn't we say that when we call a length method to a string, it shouldn't have parentheses?
No, that's you're thinking of arrays.
Okay.
No, that's valid syntax for strings. Do you all agree?
We're discussing it now. We're discussing it now.
We're discussing it now. Yeah. Do you agree?
I'm still thinking.
Still thinking. It's good to talk to other people about these things.
Yeah.
Have you all decided what you think?
Second and four.
Sorry?
Second and four.
I don't think four will work.
Why not?
Because you can't just equal to a null. Because don't you need like strings don't like to equal to stuff. Is it a string, the object of the string?
It depends what string it is. If it's not initialized, what will it be?
Because it won't be assigned anywhere.
Okay. So everybody, I'm going to stop you now. So everybody seemed to think that one wouldn't work. Is that right? Does everybody want to defend one? All right, who wants to tell me why one won't work? Yeah?
Because the length of an uninitialized variable should not be zero. It should be like either negative one or an error.
Okay, that's one answer. So the answer was, a non-initialized variable shouldn't have a length, basically. Does anybody want to give another answer, or you'll think that's fine? What will the value of string be, of name be when we when we call that method on it? Yeah?
It'll be null.
It'll be null. So that's a slightly different answer. So the answer there is that we're trying to call a method on null. What about two? Does anybody think that will not work? Yeah, why not?
Because you could use assigned name to give it an empty string and it would be like telling it to re-uninitialize it, but it's not the same thing.
So you think this particular version of the code won't work?
Yeah.
So its name will have the value of the empty string. And you think calling length on the empty string won't work?
Length would work, but you could use the assigned name method to change it back to the empty string, so it's not like it's not really the same as.
Oh, okay, so it's not necessarily doing what you intend to do, but will it run? The answer is question.
Run, yeah.
It will run. Okay, so you can call. So it may not be a good way of implementing what we thought we were trying to do. But it's not going to cause a runtime error. Unlike the first one. How about this one, the number three? So, who thinks, what was the question? So will that work? Anybody think it'll work? So if it won't work, why won't it work? Let me ask someone else. Okay, you.
Equals, you suppose only to work on the strings, and null.
So the thought there was that we've only seen dot equals for strings, which may be true. But that's probably because I haven't presented the material very well. You can, in fact, call dot equals on many, on any class, in fact, or any object.
Can nobody try to compare different types?
Sorry?
Name is string and null is.
So. You might think that would work. If name is null, then you could say, well, call dot equals on null, and it would be should give true because null is null. Any other thoughts about that? Anybody else who thinks it? Yeah.
Max? I think it would work. I'm not sure you're allowed to call methods on null in that
way. Okay, so I said earlier on. And I'll repeat it. You cannot call methods, any method, on null. Or talking about it in a kind of message passing way, you can't pass any messages to null. So although that seems semantically as it ought to work, it doesn't. You'll get a runtime error with that as well. So what about this one? Will that work? Yeah? What value is name going to have in this situation if we haven't done a thing different?
Null.
So it's unique null instance, and it turns out to be the case that. That's always going to be true.
So we can say that null is equal to null, and that's a legal.
Yep. And in fact, if you want, you'll quite often see in Java code there's some object that you don't know about, and you'd say, well, you know, does it equal null, or does it not equal null? If it doesn't equal null, then do something. Typically, if you've got an object, you don't always know. If it's been initialized properly. So it's a good thing to. If you get something called a null pointer exception, that's almost always going to be because you tried to call a method on an object that hasn't been initialized. So if you see a null pointer exception, that's a good cue to think, should I check for null somewhere? Should I check that an object hasn't been initialized properly? Good. OK, let's move on. Format strings. So you may have seen some of these. I'm just going to quickly go through it. It's just a bit of syntactic sugar, really. And it'll be something that's familiar to you if you've used C-like languages. So something like this, which is the only thing where I've officially taught you to get the student named single quote Lee, single quote is aged 18. If we know name and age, trying to get that string out is quite complicated. You have to use lots of pluses, and it looks kind of unintuitive. If we think about how to do this, how we might want to do it, we've got two positions here, the name and the age, that we want to plug values in from variables. So we've got a kind of template string. We can think of having slots in it where we put those values in. These things with percents here, percent s, are called format specifiers. So that's a special bit of syntax. These act as placeholders into which you can put values. The single quotes here are just because I wanted to have single quotes in the output. They're nothing to do with the format specifier. It's just part of the string. So this whole thing is a string, but it's a special string because it's got these format specifiers in it. And I have to find a way of plugging those holes, so to speak, putting values into those slots. So the percent s is a placeholder. The s signifies string. The percent is just a special designator. And we have to find a way of replacing those placeholders with an actual value. We do that by, in this case, using string.format. And then we have the string with placeholders, and then as many arguments as there are placeholders. So there are two placeholders, so we need two arguments. And we fill them in order. So the first one goes into the first placeholder, the second into the second. So one thing we can do is we can say, right, the string stra is equal to the value of calling string.format, and then I can print that out, and I get this, assuming that name is Lee and age is 18. I can also call printf and directly include the string with placeholders followed by the arguments, and that gives us the same result. There's some certain amount of type coercion that takes place. So if this is a character here rather than a string, it will get coerced to a string when I put it, when I plug it into that argument there. Perhaps it wasn't a good idea to put single quotes in that string there. They're a bit of irrelevance. The point is that this is a character here, but it gets turned into a string when we do the string formatting. We can also do something with floating point numbers. So percent %f will say we're expecting a floating point number, a double, or a float. First example here, I've just used percent %f. And then what I get out is, in this case, six decimal places. The dot two there says, only give me two decimal places. And so it truncates the floating point number as shown here. Notice that actually I cheated slightly because I wouldn't have got a new line here with that code because there's no printf doesn't introduce a new line character. So if I want a new line character, I have to do it myself, and that's what I've done here with the backslash n. Okay, so that's print. Print formatting. Okay, I'm going to go on now and try and work through another example to try and sort of do some thinking about how we could design a data type for hotel rooms if we had some client code that was trying to keep track of room reservations. So this is our client code. It's got start date and duration of the stay, and we're going to create hotel rooms with numbers and the amount of the room rate, create an array of rooms, room 1, room 2, room 3, and then I'm going to print out for each room whether it's available given the start date and duration, and then call some other method, print bookings, which says which bookings have been made. So according to this, I need to design a method is available and some utility which prints bookings, which is not so important. So here we've got creating objects, initializing them, calling a constructor. We've got an object name, R, and we've got a method. So given that client code, what's the API we want? So the values are room number, room rate, and the dates which that room has been booked for. And I'm going to assume that we have the indices here represent days of the month. So this is the data that we want to hold, and these are all going to correspond to instance variables. And the methods, well, we've got a constructor, which takes the room number and the daily rate. We've got isAvailable, which takes the starting date and then the number of days, something that shows bookings, and something called toString, which will allow us to print out that object as a string somehow. And there are various kinds of fiddly bits of things that we can think about. I got a bit carried away when I did this example last year, and I spent much more time trying to do something that sort of looked nice, but it's not really that relevant, to tell the truth. Notice that if we've got our object hotel room, we can create an array of those things. So we've so far seen arrays of strings and ints and so on. There's no reason why we shouldn't have an array of hotel rooms. We've got our new class here. We can make, it's got a reference type. We can make an array of elements of that reference type. We can either initialize like this or like this. Notice that here we're calling new on the right-hand side each time. We've got a constructor here, which takes the room number and the daily rate, and those correspond to instance variables. And we've got some method here, isAvailable. So instance variables, constructor, instance method. So there's three parts, which I talked about before. I'm going to recommend that you get into the habit of using the modifier private for your instance variables. And I'll say more about why that's a good thing next time. It's called encapsulation, or part of a methodology for encapsulating, which sort of says you should try and keep the data of your objects private. And it's only the methods which tell you what data you can get to or what data you can modify. There's another modifier here called final, And we use that if we've got a value that we don't want to change. So if you declare an instance variable as final, that means nothing should come along and then change its value. Nothing should come along and reset it. So the assumption here is that if I have a room in my hotel and I call it room number 32, I'm not going to go and change that at some point. I'm not going to change it to 55. But I might change the room rate. Supposing I have something that prints out, I have my hotel reserver code, and I want to know if a room is available from the 12th of February for 3 days. And I say, right, print out all the rooms. I might well get something like this, where I've got this weird gobbledygook. You probably saw something like that when you tried to print out arrays. Yeah? Any of you tried to print out arrays? And you get something like that, which is just so it's just a memory address, essentially. And that's not very helpful. So we've got an object called H, or room, and we stick it as an argument of hotel, of print line. We want something nice coming out. What we do here is call this method, or define this method toString, so it returns a string. And we can put anything we like in here. Here I've put room number, followed by a tab, followed by a format specifier, followed by a new line, followed by room rate, followed by a tab, followed by pound, followed by %s format specifier, with two trailing zeros, probably by new line, and then giving the room number and the room rate. But that's a lot of detail, it's not really crucial. It'll print out something like this now. What is important here is that Java will always have a toString method for any object. By default, it will just print out the memory address, which is not very interesting. So you always get a default value of toString, and that's what gets called when you pass that object into a string, or put it in a string context. So what we did was we defined our own toString, and we'll see in a week or two that all the classes in Java are arranged in a big hierarchy. So at the top there's the kind of super mother class called object, which everything inherits from. So everything inherits a toString method from object. If we write our own toString, that overrides the one that we would have inherited. So that's called overriding. We'll see more of that. And it means that our object gets to say how it wants to present itself, how it wants to be printed. Okay, so I'm not going to go into more detail about that particular bunch of code. The important thing is here is just to show that if we want to print out something, we should define our own toString method in our class. Constructors. So if I define this circle here and I try and call circle with an argument, I'm going to get a compile time error because I didn't define a constructor which took an argument. If I say new circle with no argument, that does work, even though I didn't define a constructor. So why is that? Because Java automatically gives you a no argument constructor. So if you don't define a constructor, you'll automatically get a no argument one. What about this case where we do define a constructor? So it says we've got a constructor that takes one argument. What happens if we call circle with no argument? We get an error. And that's because Java says, well, you obviously know what you're doing. You're a smart person. You've defined a constructor. I'm not going to give you a default one. So if you already if you explicitly define a constructor, Java will not give you a default no argument constructor. So if you want to be able to call this, you have to define a no argument constructor yourself. So here's an example of how you might do that. Here we've got the constructor that does take an argument, and here we've got one that says, all right, no arguments. We'll just by default say the radius is unit. And that's generally, well, some people think it's a really good thing to always define a no argument constructor, but that's kind of the kind of no-brainer option, and you ought to be able to support that. One thing you might see is calling this in that kind of context, which looks kind of confusing. So the first time we just used this instance variable and gave it a value. This time, oh, what's going on here? This just says call the constructor of this class which does take an argument and give it the value 1. There's no particular advantage in this case, but there may be sometimes some advantage in referring to some other constructor in the class. If you want to do this, it has to be the first line. OK, that's that. OK. Are there any questions about constructors? Yeah. So when you do something like, it depends what you mean by object. I mean, you've got. If you've got something like that math.py, then that's in some sense a constant, and it's not. You're calling it on the class, so it's static. And it's final as well; it doesn't change. So that may be a little bit like what you're talking about. I can say more about that kind of thing later on. I mean, a static method is one which has all the information it needs just by virtue of the class it's in. An instance method typically is going to do something which involves the values of instance variables. So one of the convenient things that we get with object-oriented programming is that once you've created a new object and it has some state, it has some values for its instance variables, it has some data, that can be shared amongst all its instance methods. We don't have to pass that data explicitly as an argument. So in a purely functional approach, all the data that a function works on has to be passed explicitly as an argument, right? In this kind of approach, OOP, we can directly access the data that's held in the instance variables without that being passed explicitly as an argument in the function call, in the method call. And that's sort of one of the most kind of critical things about what makes an instance method an instance method, that it has access to that data. Any other questions? So if you're not sure, if you're writing some code and you're not sure, should this be static or should it be an instance method? If you find that you're passing the same data to and fro between a bunch of methods as arguments and return values, that probably suggests that if you're going to do an OOP design, then you should do those as instance methods which share common data. Okay. So I guess this is all kind of fairly clear now that we can use objects as a way of modeling things in the world. So the hotel room was an example, geometric figures another one. There's articles in the book about particles. So often if the thing you're trying to model seems to break down well into different objects of a particular type, then that suggests you might well use an object-oriented approach to model it. But it's not always obvious exactly how to break things down, of course. So data types is a way of building abstractions of our own and extending the language. We've gone through instance variable, instance methods, constructors. I mentioned that it's often useful to override toString. Also that if you don't initialize a reference type, which includes string and includes array, it'll get the value null. And you can't call any methods on null. Okay, so there's been some discussion about revision sessions. I'm trying to get those set up, and I hope they'll be set up this week. Some of you have already been in touch with Kirsten about wanting to be involved. If you haven't got in touch with her, please do so today. So write to Kirsten Belk and say you're interested in finding out about times of revision sessions. If you're in the labs and you're not quite sure why InFandango is doing what it's doing, why it's marking you down, or even why it's marking you right, then you might want to ask the demonstrator. So that's what they're there for. Tutorials / project meetings will start again this week, so Thursday and Friday. Finally, there is a Informatics 1 staff student liaison committee this Thursday. Unfortunately, it wasn't possible to find a time when all of the Inf 1 class reps could attend, and I believe the only rep from this group is Andrew. Andrew, stand up and wave your arm around. So Andrew is the person that you should give your feedback to, and I'm sure he'd welcome that and let you buy him a beer or something. So I'd encourage you to give any feedback you want to Andrew. So thank you very much, and I'll see you next Monday. last slide, I forgot to do it. This is section 3.2. If you look on the slide, it'll see it's a lot.
Sorry to disturb you, but we were just wondering, see when you define a class, yeah? This is a question. Sorry if I didn't introduce it properly.
It's okay.
See when you're defining a class, you don't need any main methods or anything like that.
No.
Okay.
So when I talked about client code...
Yeah, that's for testing, yeah.
That will have to have a main method in.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
the class itself
doesn't need to. Yeah, it's just
we
defined credit card, and I think our code was correct, but we were getting an error, main exception, and infant angle was... giving us zero.
This was today?
Yeah, for credit card, if you remember. And I looked at the J unit testing, but I don't think there's anything that should fail, technically.
Trying to think what that might be.
Because you just need to define the class, yeah? You just need to model what a credit card would be, so make sure you've got your instance variables correct and the methods are correct for it. Do you want me to bring up my laptop?
No. I'm sure there's, I'm sure you're right, and that's probably, it must be a fault in something the way we set up the exercise, which is completely our fault. I will try and perhaps I'll come up to the lab now and have a look.
Okay. Yeah.
Thanks for pointing that out.
It's fine. But then again, I could probably be wrong and just do something
wrong. What day are you in the lab? But you're not going to go.
Yeah. I've done most of it.
Already? That's quick. Do it over the weekend. Okay. Fair.
That's what I tried to do.
How'd you get on with them?
The thing is, our team project, we're kind of ahead. Yeah. Like, when you were doing, I don't know what you were doing, we were kind of, we already knew it.
I know, it's probably...
we're trying to go really quick, so it's like, I think like week two we did objects. When
so you find it all very easy?
It's only because...